Welcome back to Rain on Your Parade with J.L. Covan. I'm J.L. Covan here, as always, with Producer Mike. Hello, Producer Mike.
Hi, J.L. Good to see you. How are you?
It's great. Oh, that Mike has expanded, everybody. Breaking news. Okay, we have a big episode, and yep. I think we're going to have a bigger audience for this one.
Yeah.
So good. Mike has branched out, maybe under my inspiration. It's
tutelage.
Not really my tutelage, yeah. but just the vibe. He's now doubled his impressions. It's no longer... one Robert Downey Jr. line from the Avengers.
That's not even that good, yeah.
He's now doing the Canadian characters from South Park.
Yeah.
So I love to see the growth. Okay, I'm not going to rain on your parade.
Thank you.
That's 100% increase in impersonations.
That's true.
So I want to talk about a few things, but first I got to give the people, this is actually very important. A lot of shows coming up.
Great.
Need the people there. This Friday and Saturday, if you're listening, and don't you dare just comment and say, I'd love to, but no. Just don't say anything if you can't go. Washington, D.C., D.C. Comedy Loft, two shows Friday, two shows Saturday, June 28th and 29th. I'll be in the district. Please come. It's where my comedy career was born 21 years ago. And now it's unemployed, living on its parents' couch.
Still trying, though.
Yeah, no, he gets out of bed sometimes, you know, by noon and gets on Indeed.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Tries to get a couple, but nobody's biting.
Yeah.
Philadelphia people. Philly, the city of brotherly love and the city that gave Tom Hanks AIDS. I am there August 15th at the Punchline. August 15th, everybody. 6 years to the day that I filmed, that I recorded Thoughts and Prayers in Philadelphia. My... Sixth album. Okay. Then I'm in St. Paul, Minnesota, September 13th and 14th. Rutherford, New Jersey, September 28th. New York City at the Triad Theater, October 11th. And Chicago for a double banger, October 18th and 19th. October 18th, live making podcasts great again. October 19th, headlining stand-up.
Wow.
So what a treat for the city of Chicago. You get to see literally probably the end of my career.
Yeah.
Literally a double-barreled shotgun of comedy followed potentially by a double-barreled shotgun.
Right.
And eerie silence. So those are the shows, folks. Go to my website, jlcomedy.com. Get tickets. Don't wait. Okay. A few things before we get to our main subject today, which is Christian nationalism. Two things that are very popular in the comedy community, Christianity and patriotism.
Mm.
That's not true. I mean, there's plenty of people willing to sell out and pretend that they love those things if they can get into the Fox,
yeah.
The Fox pipeline.
Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting to be called.
A gusher of money coming from that fucking sellout oil field.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. It's just the worst. But I'm very excited about today's episode, but just a few things I want to run through. Hockey is over.
Yeah.
I'm kind of bummed about that because people are like, oh, but we have soccer in the Olympics, and I forgot about the Olympics. But
soccer.
This is, I know, but this is, I watch enough of my nephew's games. That's where I get my, and the World Cup.
Yeah.
I watch the World Cup and I watch my nephew's games. But this period of time is always kind of a bummer for me because it's like all I have is baseball, which means I have nothing.
And it seems like the audience hates baseball as well. Still the least listened to episode of this show of all time. That's saying
Take
something.
Take me away from the ball game. Find me something else. Fucking Cracker Jacks really
I get it.
Suck. Can't. Anyway. But people have also been telling me about the WNBA.
Yeah. I mean.
And I'm like, here's what I'm going to say. And this is an addendum to our WNBA episode, which did way better than baseball. As much as Caitlin Clark is enjoyable, and I complimented Asia Wilson having a very smooth game, I have to a confession to make. A guy on my Facebook timeline like 2 days ago posted a video of Maya Moore highlights.
Mm.
And she is like, you know, she's a Mount Rushmore, arguably a Mount Rushmore female basketball player. I mean, champion at UConn, of course, MVP, champion, gold. Like she has the whole... you know, whatever, you know,
pedigree
the top people have, she has that pedigree.
Oh, resume.
But I watched the highlights and I felt embarrassed. I'm not going to lie, because I was like, oh, this person, as much as I knew her name, this person did have a pretty fucking flashy,
yeah,
smooth, exciting game. Like, I was watching the highlights going like, all right, tip your cap to the people who are complaining about Caitlin Clark getting too much shine. I think it's deserved, but I'm like, these Maya Moore highlights are pretty fucking awesome.
Think about how, like, Lisa Leslie feels.
No, we're not bringing big women into the, like, tall, the big, we've established
Cheryl Miller.
The interior players, yeah, are not fun to watch, okay, at the WNBA level. Brittany Griner, an exception because she was so freakishly, like, she could dunk and she was just, like, so dominant that you were like, all right, I'll accept the George Mikan type, yeah, game from her. But the Maya Moore highlights were incredible. And then when you, the thing that brought Maya Moore to my attention was when she basically quit at the peak of her powers to work on freeing this guy from, yeah, like, death row, did it help do it, and then married the guy.
Yep.
And I was like, that,
pretty cool.
That is a much better case than giving me the Caitlin Clark versus Angel Reese,
yeah,
debate. Angel Reese is putting up numbers. Her game is not fun to watch, though. Yeah. But Maya Moore, I was like, okay, this is a better case. Like, if I were to bring a test case to the Supreme Court for Caitlin Clark is overhyped and it's racial and it's ridiculous, if I were to defend that, I don't go with Angel Reese or other people. I go with a reel of Maya Moore. And then also, she's like a civil rights activist who, yeah, quit at the peak of her career.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
Like, that is an incredible. So Maya Moore, you're welcome on the show anytime. I think I actually went to school with her cousin, and that's not a joke.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
One real quick thing about women's basketball before we move on. Have you seen the 7'3" Chinese national women's basketball player?
Fucked her last week. Why do you ask? I thought that I was trying to keep that between us.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, why?
Because she's humongous. I mean, she's 7'3", and she. I just saw the highlights before you.
I've never been pegged. She actually pegged me with her clit.
Be real for a sec. Have you seen this?
No.
It's amazing. I mean, they played Japan yesterday, I guess, or whatever. She scored 44 points. She is two times the size of anybody else on the floor. It's insane.
Yeah.
Anyway, and check it out.
She will be single for a while.
Poor girl.
That's actually really mean.
I had that thought when I was looking at the thing. I was like, man, this is.
But there's a 7'9" kid who just signed with Florida. Can we get them together and then they can just have a fucking dragon from Game of Thrones as their offspring? Everybody, by the way, we got a couple new reviews for Half Blackface. Every week, wow, a few comments come in that are like, I don't know why it took me so long, but this thing is fucking hilarious. And I'm like, I know, I'm not in the business of humiliating myself for no good reason. It is that good. It's on Amazon Prime. Go watch it. Leave a review. What that means is you go to your computer after you're done watching. You can't leave a review on your smart TV. Go to your computer, leave a review there. I appreciate it. Costs you nothing. But please do it. I want more and more reviews. I hate to be greedy, but I don't feel as bad asking for the free thing to be done over and over, yeah, again. I'm not saying keep buying more tickets.
Yeah, yeah.
I know that's that ain't happening. DC, Philly, St. Paul, Rutherford, New York City, Chicago. Come on, people, please. Also, of course, we've got the Hawktua woman.
The what?
The Hawktua. Got spit on that thing. You haven't seen this meme chick?
No.
Oh, never. She's just, it was like everywhere. I was seeing clips of the, like, posts about this thing. And I was like, what is this? It was just some woman in a TikTok, like a young woman, 24 or whatever. Guy was like, what do you do to get a guy like, you know, these fucking TikTok man on the, yeah, street, like, that are just, it's so much to complain about there. But she just said, you got a on that thing.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, she's like the internet celebrity now. So my question is, if I lip sync her, am I the comedy goat? But like merging, like instead of Avengers Assemble, it's like untalented trends on TikTok Assemble.
Short answer, no.
And it's not her fault. Like, it's nothing. It's like, it just, for whatever reason, it blew up.
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. And there was an article that she might have been talking to, like, a major talent agency, at which point somebody on the L Train platform pulled me back. They said, stand behind the yellow line, sir. You had 1 foot in the track. Good thing you're a tall feller. You could just step back up. Thank you, Southern man, inexplicably waiting for the L train in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But then we got the debate tomorrow night. A lot of people will obviously have heard this by the time the debate airs, but some won't. I think it's I wanted to tell a quick story to wrap this intro segment up. I have stopped drinking bottled water. I have stopped drinking bottled water unless absolutely necessary because of the PFABs, the forever chemicals, the plastic, the microplastics. So I've been drinking my tap water in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, yesterday we get you should start boiling your tap water because we found E. coli in a sample.
Of course.
Now, I live in a very diverse neighborhood, which diverse means you're going to get water warnings every 6 months mm-hmm. as long as you live here. So that's like the seventh water warning I've gotten. When I lived in Midtown Manhattan, I got exactly zero.
Yeah, I've never gotten one.
No,
yeah.
You're drinking the white man's water. I'm drinking diversity H2O, which can have all sorts of bad
God
things.
God forbid you live in an actual black neighborhood. You'd be drinking sludge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I was like, oh. You know, bottled water and boiled water, it's kind of a Trump-Biden analogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Biden is like, yeah, come on, man. You got to boil, man. It's old-fashioned. But Jack, once you do it, you can drink it, you can clean with it, you can brush your teeth with it, mm-hmm. all that. And we're like, I'll just go buy bottled water.
Yeah.
This is so dumb. I'm going to buy. I'll take the microplastics. And just because it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then, you know, you have Trump. Who, unlike boiled water, is a rapist.
Oh, okay.
You know, and that's the choice we have as a country, really. I don't know if you thought I was going to say Trump was bottled water.
I was not really sure where this was going. But
yeah. No, well, it's always good to have the support from the producer. Yes and no thank you. That's Mike's improv. but yeah, that's the choice America has before we get into Christian nationalism. It's simple. You have the slow, well-meaning mechanisms of democracy versus a wannabe tyrant who rapes women.
Yeah.
So, ain't tough good. Choice, America. I hope we make the right one, but I get it. It's a tough call. So, on that pleasant note, we're going to have producer Steve Okun in here to talk about the excellent documentary, God and Country, after the break. Hey, we're back from the break.
Yes,
how's
we are.
It going? Mike's favorite part of the show. Mike's favorite part of the show is when we go on break. It's like recess for him. Everything else is homework. But we are here with a very special guest. Obviously, I've been hyping this up since last week, sharing links to the great documentary God and Country. But we have a friend, somebody I've known since the pandemic. Which is where I got most of my friends, just in that desperation, that societal collapse was really where they're like, all right, we'll give JL a chance. But Steve Okun, producer of God and Country, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
No, thank you for joining us. And I was saying before we went on the air, you look great.
I live in Southern California. What can I say?
No. I've seen you in Southern California. I've had this is
you have.
This is the I have a kick-ass documentary glow up.
Thank you.
No, of course. This is a great, great movie. I already told you. My mom gave I think the definitive review, which was breathtaking. I can't believe we live in a country with these people. Why isn't this playing everywhere? That was her very succinct TikTok-esque review of the movie, and I think it was pretty perfect.
Yes, it was.
But I want to just jump right into it. We tried to get Jeff Okun on the show, I'm going to be honest with you, and he said no, so we went with Steve Okun. I'm kidding.
Seriously?
No, not seriously. Okay. But when I saw, is
well,
that...
He is one of the producers and happens to be my brother, so I can't imagine you saying no, but...
No, that's what I figured. I figured it was your brother, so I thought I'd crack a joke about getting the second. As the second son, are you the oldest or the youngest?
I'm the oldest, yes.
Oh, okay. I'm the youngest. So maybe that's why I was drawn to him. I felt that younger son energy. But this is a book. Now, for a little background for folks watching, listening, and Mike, producer Mike, is going to throw the link to the To the movie in the chat.
Yes.
And that'll be in the show notes as well on YouTube and all podcast platforms. You were basically trying to shop this movie. You were trying to option it with the author of The Power Worshippers, Catherine Stewart. When you reached out to me in 2020, you had just started the process of trying to shop this, right?
I don't remember the precise date, but somewhere around then, yes. Yeah.
And I think my first question on this, and for people, just do you want to just give your synopsis of the movie before I start asking my questions and everything about
it? Sure. I mean, to people who don't know anything about it, I would call it a primer on the Christian nationalist movement. If you know nothing about what that political ideology is now, you will once you watch the film. And the goal, I think, is to inspire conversation, just as your mom said. People need to understand this. People need to have some kind of a mechanism to talk about it. And that's hopefully what the movie has done and will do.
My first question is, and this is a little bit morbid, but do you think January 6th, because it seems January 6th, I've watched the movie twice, sort of bookends the movie. And did January 6th, this is, like I said, a morbid thought, but did January 6th give a sort of urgency, a sort of newsworthiness to the topic that maybe it wouldn't have had otherwise? Or do you think it would have been?
That's such a great question. So when I watched January 6th that day and the coverage and the crowds and the imagery, I saw Christian symbolism everywhere.
Right.
When the January 6th committee got together and held their hearings and then ultimately issued their report, the phrase Christian nationalism showed up one time in an 800-page plus report. So a decision was made. And I understand why that decision was made. But there was no, I mean, when I watched January 6th happen, I knew what was happening. Actually, there were events, if you watched the film, so you know that there were events in D.C. before January 6th on the 5th. And this was sort of a national movement to motivate people to go to D.C. as sort of kind of their expression of faith and to correct or save democracy, ironically.
Right. I thought it was, I was not as familiar, obviously, with sort of this. I'm a church-going Catholic, but I'm very, until recently, I also read Tim Alberta's book, The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. So I feel like I've gotten between that book and this documentary, I feel like I've gotten, like you said, more. I feel more than a primer. I feel like I've gotten Christian Nationalism 101. I didn't just get the syllabus, I think. I think I got more than that from the documentary. But January 6th, I did not make that connection until I saw the documentary. And I think, though, that is just sort of, that's the hook, sort of. I think that gets people, and that allows people to relate to it, I guess. Like, oh, I remember that, I remember that. And the footage that you include, some of it, and Mike was saying to me before the show, some of it is footage we're familiar with, but it's still so jarring. And some of the prayers that you see, like people are literally praying while trying to take over the Capitol. It's very jarring. And for me, the first question, and then I'm going to go, I have my bullet points to go through sort of the different topics, because the documentary really does sort of take a religious look at the movement, a sort of cultural look at the movement, a political look at the movement. So you really have this sort of comprehensive syllabus of like, oh, this is how it's affecting things in so many different ways and where it came from. But if this were a Muslim group, I mean, we know if you take every Christian nationalist and make them Muslim, this is treated a 180 or 179, let's say 179 degrees difference, because there is some concern about this. My question for you, not as maybe an expert or anything, but do you think Christian nationalism is akin to a form of terrorism?
Wow, what a great question. Terrorism is sort of a subjective phrase.
Right.
I say that, but it sort of is. And I think that if you were to go by, a an FBI definition of terrorism, a domestic terrorism, then, yeah, I think that some of the people on the grounds of the Capitol probably did commit domestic terrorism. Certainly not all.
Right.
And, you know, the decision was made during the January 6th hearings not to pursue domestic terrorism charges. So, you know, there are a lot of people there. It's funny because you could call it a terrorist event or you could call it a flash mob. You can call it all kinds of things. People were there for different reasons, right, most of which related to their perception that the election was stolen. And, you know, they came to that conclusion based on their media diet. And that media diet is so pervasive, bombarding every day. And you're sort of ratcheting people up. And of course, there was one person really driving that messaging to the point where it really did become almost like mission-based, the idea to go to D.C. on a church bus.
Who is that person, just for some of our slower listeners and viewers, who is that person driving the bus?
I don't know that he even has a driver's permit, to be quite honest with you. But yes, that would be Donald Trump.
It's because I think, and I don't want to draw, I'm not trying to be flippant when I make this comparison, and we'll move off. This was just one of my questions about like how you categorize, because I think there is a, you know, a Christian bias in this country. And I say this as somebody who goes to church. I'm not saying this as like George Carlin, but where there is an extra benefit of the doubt. Like, in other words, when the U.S. were putting bases near, you know, in Saudi Arabia, there were probably a range of Muslim reactions to that, mm-hmm. ranging from I don't like it to this is an offense to my faith to I'm going to take up arms and do some horrible historic things. But we'd be much more comfortable lumping more of that ideology into an aggressive anti-American terrorist ideology, whereas there would probably be many nuances in that batch of people. Whereas here, I feel like you said, I didn't realize that one mention of it. Would you say that's probably because it's like, well, we, you know, too many people, maybe some left and a lot on the right, would not want to hear Christianity spoken of in any negative terms that would turn people off too much? Is that a sort of, do you think that was a consideration, or they just didn't think about it?
I do. And it's sort of a fascinating phenomenon to me. I think that, you know, we live in a world of secular media. And I think that secular media has always been challenged with the topic of Christianity and religion in general. And that enabled kind of this, again, this is not Christianity, this political movement,
right,
to kind of like grow on the sidelines without any kind of observation. And it actually took a lot of really senior people within some Christian culture by not surprise, but I think that, like, I guess here's my experience. I come from this, from the Christian film business. I worked in that world for many, many years and had a terrific experience making faith-based films. And I know most of the people in that world who are making those films. And based on that experience, it takes you sort of into a kind of an evangelical media ecosystem. Mm-hmm. It's a parallel media ecosystem that exists next to the secular world. And you can live in that world and really never experience anything from the outside world.
Like, I used to only watch Spanish language television, and I would be like, what do you mean not every weather woman is a 10?
Exactly. Yes. So it's possible to sort of cultivate a culture right out there in the open. But again, the traditional media was very wary of kind of like calling some of that stuff out because, in my view, there's sort of a conservative Christian catapult ready to spring, and that is the rock in that catapult is persecution,
right,
being persecuted. And the whole idea around a lot of even Christian nationalism is the idea to support religious freedom, which is, of course, as ironic as you can get, because my understanding of Christianity is that you're trying to, you want to share the gospel.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to impose the gospel. There's nothing more contrary to the teachings of Jesus than imposing the gospel.
Right.
But that kind of is what the movement has become in not only the United States, in various countries around the world.
Well, Reza Aslan said it, I think, perfectly in the film when he said, it's not about Christian values, it's about Christian power. I thought that was like, you know, like a, almost a perfect, if you could describe the Christian nationalist movement in one sentence, that's almost what it is. And, you know, David French, the columnist for the New York Times, who I enjoy reading, who's become sort of a lightning rod in his own, you know, in his own world now. I think he was banned from some sort of big conference recently.
Last week.
But he, you know, he had said, I thought it was very interesting, he made this idea of like, you know, this is a chance, this moment of secularism is a chance for true devout Christians to offer a counterculture, a faith-based counterculture, not to dominate. The goal is not to dominate the culture, as you said, it's to share the gospel and to, you know, kind of be an example of your values to people instead of this sort of, and it runs throughout the film, this idea of like a, it's funny, except it's scary, of like a muscular, vengeful, like kick-ass, take names, Jesus Christ. Like, I mean, it's so far from, you know, and we don't need to get into like the nitty gritty of theology, but on a basic level, it's so far from the Jesus Christ 101, like the basic things of it. It represents almost none of that. Obviously you had, I thought it was interesting because you had the VeggieTales guys there. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll go right from terrorism to VeggieTales. But I liked his interview because he talked about his upbringing. Phil Vischer.
Yes.
He talked about his upbringing in this sort of, you know, they were just sort of matched like church and the flag. It was not obviously a negative connotation. It was just kind of like, I'm American and I'm Christian, and they go hand in hand. And if you're getting that from a young age, you sort of associate, you don't associate America with pluralism and tolerance. You just say, you know, it's Christian. It's like they go hand in hand. And I actually had an experience over Memorial Day weekend where at my church in Bloomfield, New Jersey, before the mass officially started, so it wasn't part of, you know, the Catholic Church is very not big on secular music during the service, but the organist played God Bless America like right before mass started. And I said, first of all, it's a terrible song. Okay, just on a musical note. But I was just like, I don't, you know, it wasn't like, oh, this offends me, but it was like a little uneasy because I was like, this is not about nation or anything like that. You know what I mean? It's my church is not, you know, it's not Pastor Greg Locke's church, but it's, you know, it still was like an unfamiliar thing. And I was like, why are we playing God Bless America at church or even like before mass?
My personal take on it is that I'm not a Christian. I have no issues at all with American flags in churches. I just don't want those churches to say, you can't put that American flag in your house of worship or your house of worship. It belongs in this house of worship.
Right.
That's the problem, in my view.
Yeah. No, and like I said, it's not like a bet. But as you can see, I think with the VeggieTales, I'm just going to call him the VeggieTales guy. There is like a slippery slope, though. That's also the problem. Once you marry these things a little bit, they can go off the rails and they can become a sort of monstrous pairing, which is what
I
think.
So you know how complicated the world is, right? We're all getting so much data all mm-hmm. the time from all these sources, and we're all trying to figure out like who we are, what our identity is. And I think that a lot of Christian nationalism is it's heavily wrapped up in sort of like an identity movement, a populist identity movement, but also a persecution identity movement. And you know, every day we try to figure out who we are. And as I mentioned earlier, there is that vast Christian media ecosystem that has sort of veered from kind of gospel teachings into politics.
Right.
And a lot of these media entities are not-for-profits. They're huge companies. And you wouldn't know that you weren't watching a political network.
Right.
So people who are accessing this information, and by the way, it's not just broadcast television, it's radio, it's podcasts. If you want to say something, there's no barrier to an audience, right? So millions and millions of people are commuting to and from work, listening to the podcast. The information is everywhere. And what I think has happened is that Christian nationalism, in a way, has become a media genre. It's this really aggressive, muscular, angry media genre. And there are a lot of people who recognize how to what buttons to push to drive that. And it has very little to do, again, with the teachings of the gospel.
Right. And I think, however this movement sort of incubated and grew like a gremlin fed after midnight, Donald Trump is kind of, in some ways, from the outside, like I, you know, like so many of us are, he looks like, how are they going for this guy? Like, and this documentary, while it doesn't spell it out, it sort of gives you all you need to know, because it's like, oh, if you think every Christian is just humble, charity, and if we are blessed are the persecuted, you know, blessed are, you know, those picked on for their faith. If you think of just what you know as like the teachings of Jesus, it makes no sense. But when you see Donald Trump is the embodiment of the I am both all powerful and a complete victim at the same time. And what you're describing, he's like the peak embodiment of this movement in some ways, because he is, I am the one who can do it. I am the savior. I am the chosen one. Like when he looked up into the sky and actually said that, which you would think, oh, he's blaspheming. That's usually a no-no with church folk. And, but at the same time, he is the, you're picking on me. They're very nasty to me. Please help me. Please donate. It's so sad what they're doing to me. And by the way, I'll destroy all of them so easy. It's so quick. I can get them so quick. In 2 seconds, I can destroy the entire left. But they're being nasty to me. And you've got to donate because you have to protect your president, who is all-powerful and a very strong guy. And that, like, somehow that is consistent.
In other words, if I'm being persecuted, you're being persecuted, and we're in this together.
Yeah. Right. And together we can be strong and defeat everybody and be the winners, just like Jesus did when he was willingly crucified.
Yeah. I mean, and just a really, really important distinction to make. And that is the fact that there are millions and millions and millions of Christians who are living beautiful lives,
sure,
you know, aligned with gospel teachings. And even it's been interesting for me, coming from that media culture, to have conversations with friends of mine in the Christian film business, for example. And when I was talking about this project, and I have friends in, you know, most denominations, but the majority of the faith-based film business targets evangelicals. Mm-hmm. So most of the people who I work with are evangelical Christians. And I would talk with these friends of mine and explain like why I was doing this and why I thought it was important. And in so many different conversations, the person I was speaking with would say, you know what, my church has this program and this, we do this. Very, very focused on the work of their particular church.
Right.
And I had that conversation, you know, like I said, across the spectrum. And I realized that I've come to look at Christianity almost like a six-lane highway. And in those lanes, in one lane is a Catholic person, in one lane is a Mormon, in one lane is an evangelical Christian, in one lane is a mainline Protestant, in one lane is a Christian nationalist. And he's a drunk
driver.
And
that's Fury Road.
but here's the point. He's a drunk driver, and they don't even know he's there. People are wearing blinders, and they're really focused on their own mission work, because it's really awful to hear all these things about Christian nationalism. And so people tend to like really kind of drill down into the work they're doing.
Wow. That's it. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. Now, obviously you have, I mentioned him before, but you know, I have a soft spot as an entertainer for Pastor Greg Locke.
I'm sure it goes both ways too.
You cannot be a comedian and offend me. I've told Laura, much to her chagrin, that if we ever find our way into Tennessee, I'd like to go to a Pastor Greg Locke service. Is he, and for people who don't know, please watch the documentary, but you know, as a primer for that, go just Google Pastor Greg Locke. You'll find some great clips. Is he going to be the nominee for the GOP in 2028?
It's a very, very good question. Depends on how the movie is received, I guess.
Yeah, he is a one of one for me, because he is actually like, he's almost like the first, and I'm sure he was doing this before Trump. I'm sure he didn't just pick up a mic in the last 3 years, but he strikes me as somebody who's like the perfect pastor for the Trump era. You know, just,
I think, you know, the challenge with making a movie like this is, you know, it's visual, so you need to put somebody on screen, and Greg Locke was there and makes a couple of appearances. Greg Locke is an anecdote. There are all kinds of Greg Locks out there who are sort of theologians, but also showmen. And this is certainly not a new tradition. And, you know, again, there is an aspect of showbiz and entertainment in that ministry, right. If you want to call it ministry. He's trying to get people into seats. And I've always thought that, you know, Trump is in show business and is an entertainer. And kind of like, again, before Trump came along, there were a lot of televangelists out there who yearned for kind of to be accepted in mainstream culture. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't happening, but I used to call a lot of, I knew many of them, I know many of them, who are, you know, marketing products. And there's a whole kind of sideline to the religion business that they're in. And I used to call those guys green room pastors. They just were so anxious to get out and start selling. But again, that's such an unfair characterization of Christian tradition in this country. There are so many people doing incredible things. And these are the people who are sort of making their jobs much more difficult.
Oh, sure. But I think once again, we don't have any hesitation, and I'm not saying you do, but we never have any hesitation in this country to condemn or be on guard, I should say, for a fringe element of a different faith and say, oh, we got to, you know, I mean, you had half the country basically endorsing a Muslim ban by Trump, even though we really didn't have any. This wasn't like 2002. This was just, it was still, hey, they're different. We always think of them as a threat. Whereas, of course, Christians, you know, if the majority of Christians were terrorists, well, the country would be gone already. But it's like you said, this is making people aware. It doesn't take 50 million people to tear down the country. It could be 50,000. It was like 5,000 on January 6th. So I think it's important that, even though, yes, nobody should take this as sort of like, see, Christians are the worst. It's obviously a fringe, but a motivated, dangerous fringe element. So obviously there's also a constitutional element to this, which I enjoyed. I'm sure Andrew Seidel, if he is into ladies, does well with the ladies. A great baritone, looks good, command of the Constitution.
He may show up in the sequel. You never know.
Oh, good. Well, the ladies, I know the ladies and some of the gents are going to want it. But I thought he, this is one of those civics lessons that you wish everybody could see and everybody should get. That's the problem, where it's like, and he says, you know, towards the end, he says, are we a Christian nation in terms of we have a lot of Christians? Of course. Are we a Christian nation in terms of Christianity and Christian people have influenced the culture through centuries of this country? Of course. Are we a Christian nation that the nation and the founding documents and the government are founded on the Bible and Christianity? No, zero, not true. And I think that you have so many politicians, Boebert, you know, it has a clip in the movie where it's just like, they just either they believe it or they know enough people will believe it when they say it, where it's just like, we're a Christian nation. There's no such thing as separation of church and state. And you're going, these are basic facts like about the country. And it's things like that, as much as the January 6th footage is scarier and whatnot, it's the inability for the country to just get together on, these aren't even basic facts about a case with Donald Trump. These are like founding facts of the country that we can't agree.
I think it's so interesting about what's happening. I've always considered our movie sort of a traveling news story. Mm-hmm. So what, 3 weeks ago when Alito was hanging his flag upside down, you know, you can process that information through God and country. Like, why did that happen? What is that?
Yes.
Oh, I understand that now. The same thing with Boebert and all the in God.
Louisiana. How about Louisiana with the Ten Commandments?
It's exactly Ten Commandments. So I mean, there are so many sort of relevant cultural touch points that we address in this movie that are really important for voters to understand. Because, you know, when you see them sort of a flag upside down, that was on a Tuesday, then Lauren Boebert on a Wednesday, and then something else on a they're all fractured messages, right?
Right.
What we've done, we've delivered hopefully a nice linear story so that, again, you know how to process all these bits that are coming at you.
Yeah, and I think also Charlie Sykes, formerly of The Bulwark, is in the movie, and he makes a point about, which I thought was very interesting, and also is a good message on, it's these people are not for liberal democracy. Liberal meaning, you know, not liberal like far left progressive, but just yes. And but he also said it's becoming, the Constitution is sort of protecting an increasingly radical minority. The minority keeps getting smaller and more radical, and the Constitution sort of safeguards an outsized influence for those people. And it's one of those things where, you know, I think people on the left would also need to see things like that, where it's like, so when you scream Joe Biden, do something, or you say, you have to understand, we need some structural change that right now just can't happen because, you know, the founders didn't envision California and Wyoming.
Exactly.
But then my next question, just generally speaking, and I think maybe we can, are there any questions in the chat area?
Questions?
There should be one from your mother, I'm hoping, at least.
No, don't put her on the spot. Don't put her on the spot. She'll just write something like, I think it was a wonderful movie. But
no questions from the chat. I'm hearing, you know, there's some comments. I don't know if there's much to report on.
Oh, good. Good. I've said it once, I've said it 1,000 times, worst fans in the world. But who do you want? Like, and I was talking with Mike before we started recording, because one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, who is this for? And I don't mean that in a flip. I mean, I watch it. I know I'm being educated on the Christian nationalism community, but I know the constitutional stuff. I know, and it validates, informs, and confirms sort of what I think is going on. And sometimes, you know, we live in a country now where you can, as you've said about the evangelical and the Christian sort of media world, you can choose your own adventure. You can choose what you learn, what you know, what you're exposed to. And this, to somebody, would maybe seem like, oh, this is a very far left thing. And it's not. But how do you, is the goal with a movie like this, other than to make money and have as many people see it as possible, this is a documentary with a purpose. And is it to get, you know, the evangelicals who are open to certain things, or maybe not just lock stock for Trump, and get some people on the left who are like, don't know the extent of the danger. So like, you shouldn't just sit home and give up, because you need to be aware of what's at stake. Cause it's not going to be, there's 100 million people who would never watch this. If you put a gun to their head in this country, I think, you know, but that still leaves obviously a lot of people to see it.
My goal initially was, again, I come from a kind of a media culture, and I have so many friends who have lost so much, family, friends, over the course of the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 years. And these are Christians. And so I wanted to create, again, some sort of a platform for engagement. Listen, I know that you can only clean a house from the inside. I don't happen to be a Christian. So I knew how important it was to secure the Christian voices that we did secure to talk about this phenomenon to a Christian audience. And we did a really terrific job of securing some really prominent people, and they were incredibly courageous in going on camera talking about this with us. And so my goal was to, again, give a 29-year-old kid who's lost her parents to whatever, can we please sit down and watch this and have a conversation? So it's not really a movie best experienced alone. It's very scary watching it alone. It's best experienced with a community of people where you can really talk about what's happening. So I really wanted to kind of hopefully stimulate that conversation. Trump got, you know, 80% of the white evangelical vote.
He got more, and this is in the documentary. He got George W. Bush was an actual born-again evangelical Christian. Donald Trump got more of the evangelical vote than George W. Bush did. That's very telling.
The difference is that the Trump support was very, very transactional. And what he said was, I will get you the Supreme Court you want. And he delivered on all the promises he made to his evangelical base. And they remembered that. And even, I mean, that's even kind of the pitch now is, the judiciary is still, you know, skewed, weighted, swamp.
Clarence Thomas wants to retire so that he can finally get millions of dollars legally.
So again, that initial evangelical support was transactional and was really because they were so fixated on Roe.
Right.
And Roe was an economy unto itself, the Roe business that drove millions of dollars through systems and institutions.
Are you seeing, sorry to interrupt, but are you seeing trans issues as like, it's not as big, but it seems to be having an outsized kind of, is that the next thing they go for? Or
It's all about low-hanging fruit. You know that. Yeah. So as soon as there is a trans story that can be easily plucked and spread as though it speaks to something more than just this individual in this community, in this state, they're going to do it. By the way, we do it too. We're all shopping for anecdotes these days, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be very cautious about, like, okay, who am I getting this from and what kind of bias might be attached to it?
Right.
Which again is why, yes, we have Andrew Seidel. We have some incredible constitutional scholars, lawyers, reporters, experts on American civics in this film talking about that aspect of what Christian nationalism is. So really, it's sort of two movies in one, one for a faith-based audience, one for a secular audience that doesn't recognize how dangerous and how close to, reaching, kind of breaching the gates Christian nationalism really is.
And it, oh yeah, Mike.
Well, I just wanted to ask sort of within the lines of making a documentary in general, do you find, you know, speaking to the anecdotal nature of where people are right now, trying to find something that supports their argument, do you find that objectivity in general is becoming a more difficult thing to, what's the word I want to use? We were kind of talking before about the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, before we started this. And this idea that, like, in that particular case, Jordan has the final cut on the documentary. So you're going to see exactly what Michael Jordan wants you to see. So in some ways, it's kind of not a documentary. But I think in the current climate, because people are so divided and, it, you know, people like JL and I who, view something like this, and in a lot of ways, it seems like our point of view politically sort of supports this from the jump. And then the documentary is more just like a look into how much worse it is than we thought. Right. Would you say that that's fair, JL?
It is, but it was, I think one of the issues with something like this is how do you convince people? Because to me, I watch it and I try to remove my bias, but I felt very educated but also affirmed in some ways.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I've often said this about the media under Trump, where people try to go for a both sides approach. If I say 1 + 1 = 2, and then this guy says 1 + 1 = 7, and then the arbiter says, let's say 3, are we all happy?
Yeah.
And I go, well, no, sometimes things are just facts. Sometimes things are just true. And this documentary, I think, takes real pain to be, but the, there's going, like I said, there's going to be people who wouldn't, who will just, they can't be reached with this, but hopefully.
Well, and I think that really complicated.
Well, I was just going to finish the objectivity part of the question is, I think where I'm trying to go, and I'm not being eloquent in how I'm saying it is, if people that are sort of the target not the target of the documentary, but the target audience. If you want somebody on the, not the necessarily the right, but somebody who is a Christian nationalist to see this and sort of view it as a way where they step back and say like, oh, damn, actually, now that I'm seeing this, some of this stuff looks crazy. But it's almost, it seems that the way the climate is right now, if you are naturally on either side, you're just going to look at something where it's almost like being objective over something where there's so much evidence where something seems so crazy is almost difficult in a way. Is that fair to say? Where you just look at this like there's no other real way to look at view this as an issue.
I think that, you know, in conveying information in any context, you need a story and you need a storyteller. So we had a story, but more important than that are the storytellers who we have. So could I convince someone who's deeply embedded in MAGA to perhaps take a step back? Probably not, but could Phil Vischer do it? Phil Vischer has raised, you know, generations of Christian kids who are now parents. He's, you know, he's earned his spot of trust.
Right.
And so,
and it'll look really weird to have a VeggieTales burning. That'd be a real bad look for even the most hardcore Christian nationalists. Get the VeggieTales bonfire going. That'd be weird.
Yes. So I think that that's really the answer.
Now, I have two questions. One is, when I read Tim Alberta, two of the things he sort of highlighted that were sort of almost accelerants to this movement, that it's been growing for a while, but Obama's election in 2008 sort of represented this, whoa, what just happened to our, like, what is this? This is bizarre. This is something I've never seen. And then COVID felt like another like kind of bookend to a 12-year period of Obama Trump that, like, you know, now, if I'm not mistaken, I don't think those two things are talked about much in the, I mean, not COVID, obviously, that would have been too.
We touched briefly on Barack Obama and the Tea Party movement.
Because there is a talk, that's the thing we haven't talked about. There is like also an element, and Reza Aslan, to quote him as well, says, you can't talk about white evangelicals without the white part. Mm-hmm. So there is, and that was, we haven't even gotten to that. That was like the third prong, which was so interesting, is the history of the movement, not just where it is now, but that it started not with abortion, but with desegregation. So it's kind the original sin is sort of steeped in a wanting to keep schools white, wanting to keep your kids.
So hard to watch. I mean, like it should be obviously, but like just seeing some of those clips of kids talking about why they won't go to a school that's inclusionary.
Yeah, they weren't even quoting rap lyrics, which would get a white kid canceled today. They were just saying it hard R just as a fact. It's crazy.
You guys, we need to look at Brown v. Board as sort of the origin of the modern Christian nationalist movement. Obviously, Christian nationalism has gone back through the history of the country. But that Supreme Court ruling did sort of alarm a lot of people and terrified a lot of people,
right,
and sort of inspired the sort of the growth of these Christian academies that were segregated. And so, yes, as you watch the film, we track, you know, how that issue was examined and talked about and happened to coincide with all kinds of other things happening in American society with, you know, the women's movement, the civil rights movement, obviously, in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, segregation or segregated schools just was never a great rallying cry. And so abortion was sort of like, it was a solution to put Catholics together with Protestants.
Almost a surrogate, to use an inappropriate analogy for the racism.
So, yeah, and if you watch the film, you'll see that, you know, when Roe came down in 73, evangelicals, for the most part, were okay with it.
Right.
One of the most prominent pastors in the country was a pastor at First Dallas Church in First Baptist Church in Dallas, I'm sorry, which happens to be Robert Jefferson's church now, was okay with abortion. It wasn't an issue until, really leading up to Reagan.
Right.
But it really did inspire the growth of the Moral Majority and a lot of other organizations that are like their businesses.
Right. And it's one of those things where that you look at it and it's the irony of like desegregation being sort of an original sin that they don't see as sort of the, you know, where this movement started. And it just feels like when somebody says history doesn't repeat, but it rhymes, it's sort of like, is Obama the Brown versus Board for a new generation, a shocking sort of racial thing that startled people. And he had an unfamiliar name. So it was very easy to label him a Muslim. And that was in and of itself enough. Ironically, just calling him a Muslim was enough for many people to go, yikes, even though nobody was accusing him of being necessarily, you know, anything other than a Muslim.
Trump, right? The birth certificate thing.
Right. But
exactly. I also remember another moment, though, when I'm not sure where he was when he made this statement, but he made a comment about people clinging to guns and religion.
Yeah.
When Obama said that, that was like a watershed moment.
Right.
And that sort of affirmed a lot of people's concerns.
And nothing worse you could literally say to a Christian nationalist than question their church and their guns.
And then the birther stuff started to happen. And I was in that world and I knew people who were kind of propagating that. And I always used to think that like these guys are not ready for prime time. So I'm hearing all of this stuff and they want a spotlight and they want to generate noise and be known.
Right.
And I take it seriously. And, you know, up to and including the nomination of Trump, I just like, no, this can't. Like most of us,
right?
This isn't possible. But I was thinking that from within Christian culture, this isn't possible, and you know, it proved to be possible.
And obviously, we can't end without talking about Reverend William Barber, who is featured in the documentary as well as sort of the, in an odd way, he's sort of the, obviously he's a well-known sort of left-leaning pastor, but. When I heard him saying thing, you know, one quote he says is, you know, there are people who talk so much about what Jesus said so little on and say so little on what Jesus talked so much about in terms of caring for the poor and all these other things that when I was listening to him and it almost, and you know, my politics and I'm a pretty thoughtful person, but even me, I was like, wow, this guy's pretty left wing. And I was like, oh, he's just quoting Jesus. He's just quoting Jesus, but I'm already in a defensive position of like, hey, you might be going too far for the Christians with all that Jesus talk, like, which is a sort of rich irony. You know,
one of the challenges I think, Joe, that Christianity as an institution has is that theologians like Reverend Barber, social gospel preachers, you know, the whole idea of, you know, the teachings of Jesus is about, you know, loving your enemy and turning the other's cheek. And their competition are guys who are sort of in a knife fight on the other side. And it's really a challenge for progressive Christians, center-left Christians, to go up against what is, you know, a highly militant, angry people who think, by the way, that they're, you know, God ordains what they're doing.
Right. And really, and we do have a question in the chat. The one thing I would add to that is it almost feels like religion is almost dealing with the same problem in an odd way as social media, which is the positive messages for some people don't get through as well as the negative messages, but you'd think teachings of Jesus would be a place where the positive messages would be getting through. But instead it's still a kind of, well, can we make Jesus a tough guy who does MMA and doesn't take shit from anybody? So, but we have a question in the chat that Mike approves of.
Maurice Walker wants to know, why is Christian nationalism so much more of an issue in the U.S. than in other Western countries? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. It's not only an issue in the United States. It's an issue in a lot of countries in Europe and Brazil, Korea, other territories around the world. I just, you know, I, there's just so much, I guess, media saturation here. And as I mentioned earlier, anybody who wants a voice has it. And it depends on how widely they can shake their hands and what kind of an audience they can attract. And so that's kind of where we are. And if you look at, like, it's funny, you mentioned Tim Alberta's book, which is a terrific book. And it's funny, while he was writing that book, he was in many of the same rooms that we were in shooting the movie.
Wow.
And he, you know, his approach was the same as, let's say, David French or Russell Moore or Phil Vischer.
Because he's from that others. He's from that world. He's not doing it as a journalist.
Yeah, and these are people who are grieving. They've invested their lives in an idea and in a value, and they want to protect it. And so that's, again, that's what I hope that God in Country, it certainly is not the solution. It's a movie. It's a 90-minute movie.
Right.
But can it move a conversation a half an inch in that direction? Maybe. And the other experience I've had is that when people see it, they talk about people they want to see it. So, you know, there's a relatively tight window for this movie to be effective.
Right.
But anybody who wants to see it can, and I hope they do.
Yeah, it is great. And my final question is something I often think about when I think of sort of Trump and then watching this movie, Christian Nationalism. Obviously, some people aren't susceptible to this. Some people aren't allured in by the sort of power and the anger and the hostility. And I've sometimes thought, you know, not bad people, not bad in like you're evil, you're bad, but in terms of, you know, the way they say hypnosis, you know, doesn't work on everybody. You have to be open to it.
Uh-huh.
There is a level to some of this community and some of these, you know, people charging the Capitol, et cetera, where I go to believe some of this stuff. I don't believe that necessarily a lot of these people are dim-witted. Like, I don't know. I was told this, and I think some of these people are open to it because they want to feed some of the anger and some hate. I think it's a proxy for things that are already in them. I don't mean to talk about like original sin and these are evil people in some sort of deep, existential way. But like some of these people, you know, not everybody buys into this. Some people leave their church. Some people find a more pleasant, charitable place to worship. And so what differentiates the people who say, I'm a conservative, I'm pro-life, but I'm also, you know, pro-charity and anti-death penalty, and I tithe and I do all these things to make my community better. I volunteer. And this is not the message for me, even though I'm steeped in this world as well. Like, what do you think? Like, I mean, it's a pretty big question, but in terms of like, I think there are just some bad people involved in this movement, and not just at the hypocritical, cynical leadership level in terms of some of these quote unquote faith leaders and Donald Trump, but in the rank and file, I think some of these people are just not good people. And it's, I don't know.
Well, that's where forgiveness comes in, of course. I think that, you know, my experience when we were out shooting the movie, we went to a lot of, you know, MAGA rallies, Road to Majority conferences, a lot of Christian nationalist events. And I always made it a point to talk to people who were there. I was really curious. And JL, like without exception, I had nice conversations with people who I thought were nice people, who were there for reasons they thought were the right reasons. Then they go into the arena and are being sold a bill of goods by this guy and this guy and this guy. And all you can do is really kind of shake your head and have empathy and hope that at a certain point, these people realize that it's not their interest that these people are interested in. You know, it's really about, you know, driving their own media brands and again, an audience shopping for an identity. How easy is that? So, you know, I just, like I said, there are some, you talk about the social gospel Christians. And that person who's tithing and doing and going through the rituals and living his life, and he says, this is not for me. Hopefully, though, he'll recognize that Christian nationalism is dangerous to the right. to the practice of Christianity. And hopefully he'll want to protect the practice of Christianity.
That's a very good, and hopefully all my listeners and
viewers. I mean, every religious tradition has zealots, right?
Sure. But I feel, and that's another- right. And that's the thing I think this country gives they have given, and you made the point, it was sort of developing on the side with nobody minding it. And I think it got some of that extra latitude because it's Christian in this country. There was a, where another religion could have never gotten to this point, whether it be Judaism, Islam, anything else. Scientology, there's documentaries about how bad Scientology is.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't, you know, Tom Cruise is the exception though. He's good. But I think that's how it was able to grow. And I think people need to rethink, you know, treat Christianity like every other religion you treat in this country best among equals or whatever the term is. First among equals is kind of how it's treated, and it should not be treated that way because you can allow these movements to grow to the point that they're at. And
you guys within Christian nationalism, there's a spectrum. So, you know, yeah, I mean, and as I said, it's a great primer. We address the idea of prophecy in the movie. Prophecy is a huge driver of, was a huge driver of what happened in January 6th, and is a huge driver of kind of Christian nationalism. And it's the idea that God has ordained certain prophets who are walking the earth, and they are able to communicate out God's word to an audience. It's sort of the Pentecostal and charismatic movements, some of the fastest growing movements, Christian movements actually in the world. And January 6th was sort of like a spiritual warfare event. It really was, where, and we talk about it in the film, Russell Moore talks about spiritual warfare. And the idea is that, yes, God, Jesus does speak of spiritual warfare, but it's in sort of theological idea. It's not tactical.
Right.
And what has happened is
And Russell Moore, Russell Moore is, he's a big deal. Right.
He's the editor and publisher of Christianity Today, and was a senior leader within the Southern Baptist Convention for a very, very long time. And another, just, you know, sitting down with Russell Moore and talk about Christian nationalism was one of the highlights of my life, actually. Fascinating. And I mentioned earlier, he's someone who I felt like this is devastating.
Right.
To see, you know, something he's worked so hard for and will continue to be sort of misunderstood.
Yeah. Well, it's a fantastic movie. And it also inspired me that if my comedy career really doesn't pan out, I think I know enough of the Bible and have enough charisma and stage presence that I could become a Christian nationalist preacher.
Not sure the charisma, but maybe.
All right.
Fair enough.
Those guys are good.
No, yeah. this was, we're going to, the movie is fantastic. We're putting our link.
Yeah, guys, it's in the chat twice. I have to comment as the Mike Coscarelli Rules account, but there's literally two links in here. Just if you're watching this live stream and if you're listening to podcast, we'll handle it later. But if you're watching on live stream on YouTube right now, just look for the chat. I popped it in there twice. You cannot miss it. Definitely go watch the movie.
And then obviously to anybody listening or watching after this, it's in the show notes. I have to say, I remember talking with you, and I have my own frustrations in the entertainment business, obviously, but I remember talking with you about this. And you were like, we're really trying, I'm trying to get this made. I have this great, you know, this book, this about the Christian nationalist movement. And what's so shocking to me is after I watched it because you sent it to me and I was like, yeah, I mean, I remember you talking about this. I'll watch this. This is a topic of interest. I thought it was so good and so informative and tight and of the moment. And that I was like, I felt happy for you, honestly. You know, I projected my own frustrations onto you and said, look at this. This should have never been a struggle to make. This is so well done. And this is so important. And that's the business of entertainment. Things that are great are a struggle. And then morons, you know, become billionaires. But it was like, when I was done watching it the first time, I just thought, well, this was so great. This should be seen by a lot of people, but this shouldn't have even been a heavy lift to like get done.
Anybody who's made a movie will tell you that every movie is a heavy lift,
right?
Unless it's the third or fourth in a series. And also, I worked. My gosh, Dan Partland directed the film. He's a terrific director, and Rob Reiner produced the film. And you know, talk about dream team.
Who's the second guy? Who's that?
Yeah, he's an up and comer. You're going to hear about that guy.
All right. Well, it's good. Good that you gave him this opportunity. I think that's, once again, I'm speaking your praises, and you know,
I'm here to help. Yes.
I think that's certainly enough from us. I appreciate you doing this, and I appreciate you making the film. It is great, and I hope whatever plans you guys have for it in the months leading up, I hope it exceeds everything you want, because not enough people can see this movie. It's just really...
We need it to. And this is one statement of so many in the market now trying to explain what this is to voters. So I hope that people access our statement and learn from it as well.
And for the people who, you know, like somebody like Michael Moore is a documentary filmmaker who puts his stamp on it and they become media events. Mm. For anybody who would be like, oh, he's too this, or he's too left, or has too much of an agenda. This movie is not that. This movie is not a sort of, hey, look at us. We're taking it to the Trump MAGA movement. This is a sober, but somehow entertaining and deeply informative movie that's great. It's a great piece of work, and you should be very
last thing
proud.
If I can say it, just I want to address that. I mean, my view from the beginning was that this not be a polemic in any way.
Right.
I've been involved in a lot of Christian movies, and I think that this is one of the most sort of pro-Christ movies I've ever touched, and I hope that that's how the audience interprets it.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you. So.
Thank you.
But to all my secular fans, it's not that pro Christ. You should still watch it. No, it's great. And I thank you for making it. And I thank you for joining us on the show.
Thanks for the invitation. You guys take care.
Of course. And, that's going to do it for the stream. We're got any final thoughts here, JL, before we throw to break now that we're back in podcast form?
Yeah, no, it's, I think I thought that was wonderful. That was a joy. And I hope everybody feels the same way and goes and rents the movie and tells a friend, like, it's that good. And it's rare is the thing that you can say, I enjoyed it. I learned, and this was also important. Welcome back, everybody. How was the break, Mike?
It was great. I thought Steve was great.
A lot of heavy stuff.
Yeah, heavy stuff.
Anyway, guys, Punchdown of the Week. I'm doing it as myself. Scott Pelley didn't want to be anywhere near this discussion.
It's too hot.
It's too hot. I wrote after the Florida Panthers won the Stanley Cup. Florida, they throw rats on the ice, like fake, like toy rats on the ice. It's a tradition. So I said, all these bearded, violent white guys and talk of rats. Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup or new episode of House of the Dragon? Very timely tweet about a popular show and a sporting event. And then somebody wrote back, well-meaning, and they're not incorrect, but they said...
But you crushed them anyway.
Or a Trump rally. Now, there's obviously my annoyance at never being able to make a joke where somebody doesn't refer to me as sir or try to like really without lube force in a Trump reference.
Yeah.
So the person isn't wrong, but the joke was very perfect because House of the Dragon was all about rats. Mm. So I was like, yeah, they all look like they could be on Game of Thrones, rats. It was perfect. And then somebody had to interrupt the party. But it's not an egregious one, but it is a legitimate Punchdown of the Week.
Sure.
It's not like the worst offender ever. And I don't have a special to review this week, folks, because it was just too heavy a week with me contemplating evangelical nationalism.
Of course.
Christian nationalism. So I'm just going to tell you guys as a general recommendation, because I want to keep real comedy alive. I want people to... If you've never watched the show, Eastbound and Down, you know, we're in the season of baseball now.
Mm-hmm.
Where baseball sort of reigns supreme for a little bit. So it's really the worst time of the year. It's the most boring time of the year. Eastbound and Down is what baseball would be like if it was fun and crazy.
Oh, enough.
So, no, not enough. So go, if you've never watched Eastbound and Down, it's on Max, 4 seasons. Stevie Janowski, for me, is one of the 10 or 15 greatest supporting characters in comedy TV history. And that's it. Go watch that. Have a great week. Mike, any housekeeping before we let the people go?
Just do the usual things that we ask you to do. Please subscribe to the YouTube if you are not subscribed and interact with the episode. It's a huge help for the algorithm, which we are now begging to help us get people to view the content. If you are a listener, head over to the YouTube. If you're a viewer, head over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and just make sure you're downloading the audio version too, because you can take that on the go and you can listen to us on a car ride. People are going out to the Hamptons or to the Jersey Shore or wherever you live and going to the beach and doing summer stuff. Take Rain on Your Parade with you. And that's that.
Yeah, and leave a review on your preferred audio platform, you know, while you're doing all the other things we ask you to do that are free. Do that as well.
Yeah.
So thank you. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, share it in whatever capacity, whether audio or video, share it. Get a friend to start listening. If you like it, I would assume maybe some of your friends might like it. So thank you. Hope to see some of you in Washington, D.C. this weekend. And I will see the rest of you next Thursday, which doesn't really work as in that, you know, see the rest of you next Thursday. That doesn't spell anything. See you next Thursday.